Well, tonight what we have is we have Dr. Kim Kuch with Oral Biotech, and his product is Carefree. Just for a little background, Kim is a dentist here in Oregon. Kim has been an innovator, an inventor of dental products, equipment, devices. Besides practicing dentistry full-time, he was the inventor and partner in the company Creative. Some of you may have known of that. They had the air-abrasion handpiece. He's been very active in laser dentistry. Has started an organization called the Association for Minimally Invasive Dentistry. As a matter of fact, they're having a meeting in Anthony Lakes. And if you were able to see my next slide, oh, I know how to do this now. I bet this will work. There we go. We're doing a ski meeting, of course, Park City, February 26th to March 3rd. Whistler, March 4th to the 7th. I'll be speaking one day on the 4th at Canadian Dental Association meeting, then up to Whistler. And then the next weekend, Kim has a meeting at Anthony Lakes, which is here in eastern Oregon. It's close to where my brothers have their farm. So I said, sure, I'll come. But Kim has been very active in a lot of innovation in dentistry. A few years ago, started the company called Biotech, and with his products, Carefree. I became aware of this product just a few months ago. I've had some of his representatives come to some of our meetings. Some of you have met them. Carrie Cady is a lady that's been coming to those. Kim, why don't you tell us a little bit about the science of these products first?
Okay. The science really starts back in about 1987, 88, 89. Philip Marsh at Leeds University in the U.K., pretty conclusively proved with a series of experiments that the selection pressure for the dental caries biofilm infection, the bacteria that actually cause cavities, is driven not by sugar, but it's driven by the pH. And so these bacteria are acidogenic, aciduric, and what Philip proved in this series of experiments was it's actually the drop in the pH that causes the shift in the biofilm from healthy bacteria to these cariogenic bacteria. And at one time, you know, we all were, pretty much everybody on the call tonight, I'm sure, was instructed on the strep mutans, lactobacillus model of dental caries. That is changing dramatically day by day at the moment. As we're able to do DNA-type research, we're able to identify the actual bacteria that are involved in this process. We've identified pretty close to 30 now. And you're going to see that number continue to grow over the next 4 or 5 years. So the science really started in, it's a pH issue, and so these patients you have that are high risk for cavities have a low pH in their mouth for extended periods of time. That could be related to sugar in their diet, could be related to not enough saliva, could be related to medications, could be related to their natural body pH is low, could be related to a lot of different issues. But the reality is it's that pH which is causing or fueling their disease. So as I started looking at how do we, you know, treat this disease, I was tired of just drilling and filling, and, you know, the patients kept coming back with more decay. And, you know, after doing that for 20 years, I finally woke up one morning and said, this doesn't work, and we need to do something differently. So I started reading all of the available science. I came across Phil's work, and then I, you know, a person who is logical and asks a lot of questions, I thought, well, if that's what's driving this equation that direction, could we drive it back the opposite direction by utilizing pH? And interestingly enough, nobody had ever done that before. So I began testing all of the existing dental products because I wanted to use the products that had the highest pH. And what I discovered in testing them is they're all acidic and pretty much very acidic. Like pH is we have pHs in the 2.7 to about 6.5. And, of course, enamel demineralizes at 5.5. So we're looking at a window there. Most of your oral healthcare products that you pick up off the shelf are somewhere between 4.5 and, say, 5.5. So if you're trying to correct the biofilm disease and you want to alter the pH on these bacteria and raise it because they don't survive in a higher pH, their enzymes, their cell walls, they're not designed to live in a high pH, and the healthy bacteria are. So we really need to go back and look at, well, how do we raise the pH? And that drove me to trying to look at, well, how can we get products in the mouth? you know, and we really sat out from scratch and started to design our own products. Like, if you were going to, based on this known science, if you were going to design a product, what would it look like? And so, of course, fluoride is great for remineralization. We know that xylitol has some great effects on the mouth as well, and there's a lot of science, you know, around all of those materials individually. And then we started raising the pH and looking at that as another component in this line of products. We've done a lot of our scientific research. We just wrapped up a couple of years of studies at OHSU here in Portland, actually award-winning studies. And we started with the Cary screen, which is a biometric which measures the ATP on the teeth. And we've drawn a very strong relationship between the amount of ATP and the patient's caries risk. And there's quite a bit of science behind that. I don't know how much you guys want me to go into. You can ask some questions maybe later about that. But we did the validation science there. We're currently got about a 300 children study going on at Griffith University in Australia. We were into that study about 1 year, and we've had excellent results using one of the treatment rinse product in terms of raising the pH and getting rid of these cariogenic bacteria. I do a lot of research on my own. I've got 3 studies on patients going on right at the moment, and I'm pretty much the only private researcher that's been accepted to do research at the Forsyth Institute in Boston. And at the Forsyth, they have the best DNA database of oral bacteria in the world, and so I can take a plaque sample on patients, send it there, and I can give you an actual profile with relative numbers of the bacteria of against 448 known bacterial species now that we've identified. So I'm starting to do before and after studies where I'll take samples of the patients, the high-risk patients' biofilm beforehand, put them on a 30-day regimen with one of the carry-free products, and then take another plaque sample and look at their biofilm and look at the comparison. And in the process of doing that, one of the interesting things I've discovered is only about 60% of the patients, the high-risk patients I see, have any mutant streptococci at all, and only about half of them have any lactobacillus. So that whole model of this is a mutant streptococci lactobacillus disease, when you start looking at the DNA evidence, doesn't hold up. And we see there are a lot of sacrolytic bacteria that I'm starting to see consistently in all these patients. So and I'm not the only investigator seeing that. Ruth Pastor back at Forsyth is involved in his own studies, particularly with geriatric root surface caries, and they're seeing, they're starting to see a real frequent pattern of Selenomonas, Dialister, and Megasphaera. So there's a lot of other bacteria that play a role in this disease, and that's kind of the science behind it. It's really about the pH in the mouth.
So to sum it up, regardless of bacteria present, it's the pH in the mouth that causes caries.
That would be it, yes. I mean, that sums it up, Bill. And so if you want to, that took me, you know, like 25 minutes to say. But there's a lot of science behind this. If any of you guys want any more of the scientific information, I'm happy to get that to you or share it with you, because there's a lot of it. So it's primarily the pH. So if you wanted to correct that and you start treating the pH in the mouth, you have some interesting things. People stop getting cavities.
Well, the thing that I see here is how to change the standard of care. And I have a very progressive group of doctors in my program that are always looking how to improve their practice, how to, you know, be on the leading edge, how to, and I think from a business point of view, it's how to distinguish your practice from someone else's practice. And when I found out what Kim was doing, you know, I've always been amazed. Kim, you might just share, before we go on, what other products have you been involved in since you started practicing and in development of?
Well, I actually developed, my first product was a laser handpiece, which is still used in the marketplace. I developed the first high-speed curing light. They thought we were nuts when we did that back in the early 90s. Developed the second light-activated bleaching system back in the 1990s. And actually, in my opinion, it was the first one that really worked. Then I got involved in air abrasion and designed air abrasion devices and abrasives and nozzles. And then I've been involved in thermoplastic resins like the Valplast type resins and acetyl resins. The resin that they make the Snap-on Smile out of, I developed that product. So I've been involved in a number of those kinds of products. And then I got into oral healthcare products just strictly out of if there had been, honestly, if there had been a product on the market that had a high pH, I'd be using it. And but for the lack of one, I ended up, Doug Young from UOP, Graham Milicic from New Zealand, I had a little influence from he and No from Singapore University, and we sat down and put our heads together, had a lot of advice from John Featherstone at UCSF, and we designed products that we thought would, you know, based on the science, would be the best to treat this disease.
Okay, so why don't you talk about, Kim and I had a conversation about a week ago, and I put some slides here, and they may not be in the order that Kim wants to talk about it tonight. But
they're fine.
Why don't you talk a little about what the standard of care has been when it comes to treating a carrier's patient, and where you see it going?
Well, I mean, the standard of care, I think we were all taught in school, is we were using explorers and visual and radiographs, maybe magnification, caries detection dye, diagnodent. You know, you can go down a list of devices and diagnostic tests, but we were identifying cavities. And the cavity is really just a sign or a symptom of this underlying biofilm disease. And what we know clearly now is that just filling the teeth, drilling and filling, does not correct or eliminate the biofilm disease. So that's why we see these patients are, you know, they're chronic caries patients for life, most of them, until they run out of teeth or die. And I mean, we kind of, in my practice anyway, I was trained to fly the plane slowly into the ground. And that's been the standard of care. The surgical model just doesn't work if you want to really treat the disease. So the standard of care is changing, and it's changing pretty rapidly. We started with this 7 years ago, and at the time there were just a couple of dental schools in the U.S. teaching it. It's pretty universally taught now at all dental schools. They either have adopted it as standard of care, or they're in the process of adopting it. So it's recognized as standard of care by the California Board of Dentistry. It's taught at all 5 schools in California standard of care. Every patient in every dental school, actually in the western United States, has a caries risk assessment prior to any treatment. It's now part of the Western Regional Board exam as well. It's not a matter of identifying a cavity and doing a Class 2 GB black amalgam cavity preparation. You need to do a caries risk assessment first, and then also have a caries treatment plan that involves addressing the biofilm disease. So it's recognized as standard of care. You know, this is the one we all don't like to talk about, but it's recognized as standard of care in the courtroom as well. So
why don't you talk about that? We don't like to talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Well, okay. Ed Zinman is a periodontist / attorney from San Francisco, and I know Ed quite well. In fact, Ed helped me co-author a couple of papers. But he defends patients against dentists, and the patients that are, you know, that are going, well, actually, they're not going to trial. The malpractice companies are settling out of court because, in their mind, this is all benefit. No, doing caries risk assessment and the medical management of dental caries is all benefit and no risk, and it's considered standard of care in the state of California. So, he's defending patients who went to the dentist. The dentist identified 6 cavities, filled their teeth, and didn't measure them, you know, make any diagnosis in terms of their risk assessment towards dental caries and address treating the disease from a medical model at all.
So Ken, if a patient had a large case, full mouth reconstruction, for example, this test, if it was a case that was caused by decay, not a case caused by wear,
right,
and you treated this patient and they ended up with recurrent decay,
if you're
hanging out there.
Yeah, you're hanging out. You have no defense, essentially. But so if you do a caries risk assessment and you provide a caries treatment plan or program to manage that disease, and then the patient gets decay, well, I mean, you know, hey, we can't cure everything perfectly, but at least you've done every reasonable attempt to treat, address, and identify, diagnose, and treat their disease for them.
We can't control the compliance of the patient, but if we did not even provide the opportunity,
if we didn't ask the questions and provide the information,
we could be in trouble.
You're in trouble. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, seriously. So a lot of, I mean, you know, and the reality is when we look at, you know, caries risk assessment, it's an easy thing to do. There are a number of forms. We have a form that I actually simplified from John Featherstone's. It's been clinically validated. Every question's been weighted and tested in 2 different clinical trials. But it's a simple thing that can be done in your hygiene department. It gives you and confirmation and the patient, I guess, confirmation and confidence that you know what you're talking about in terms of treating this disease. So it's easy to document. We have the biometric, the carry screen test that I talked about earlier. That's a 15-second chair-side test, and that gives me a pretty good metric to rely on for is this patient at risk for this disease or not. And so it's a simple thing to weed out, separate the people that are at risk for this disease or the people that are not at risk. And if you've got a healthy patient, you document that they're healthy. And at that point in time, any elective dentistry that they want, whether it's veneers or, say they're an occlusal issue with occlusal wear problems, you want to change vertical. I mean, literally, any material you want to use, whatever you want to do is going to be successful. But if you've got a high caries risk patient and you don't change the biofilm, I don't care what kind of restorations and how you bond them on their teeth, they're going to come back with recurrent decay.
So if you were working with a patient, I'm just thinking an opportunity here for in presenting treatment to a patient who's always had a lot of decay,
yep,
and is thinking, oh, it's kind of silly to keep doing this. I've had dentistry done in the past. It's kind of failed. And if you actually said, well, we're not going to do treatment until we do a carry, until we stop the decay, might be a selling point.
That's a huge selling point, Bill. The interesting thing, you and I have talked about this before, but I think the real the paradox for me is when I started doing this, I'm at a point in my career where I kind of assumed I would be putting myself out of business. And interestingly enough, it's when my patients stopped getting cavities that they really started to buy dentistry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like you wouldn't buy a new car if you had no idea whether or not it would still run a year from now.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like going in and knowing that there's a 7-year warranty here. These people know what they're doing. This car is going to last. I'm going to have a good experience. Well, I'm more likely to invest money on something like that than on something that's just a crapshoot.
So if I were in a situation where I had a patient that maybe this patient might be getting several opinions on a large case, and very often,
when
people get ready to spend $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, they don't just go to the first dentist who presents it to them.
Right.
If you were to include a caries risk assessment test as part with a fee as part of your treatment plan, you can be pretty much rest assured the other doctor is not going to be doing that.
Correct.
And if
you're pretty much rest assured that patient would not see anybody but you.
And if you let the patient know.
I mean, you stop and think about it. And this is not a long, involved conversation to educate the patient. Patients get this right away. I mean, this is a 20-second chairside conversation for me. I've used this analogy, and I like to use analogies with my patients, but this is a simple one. I tell them it's like getting a cavity is like getting a nail in your tire. And what we traditionally done for you in dentistry and maybe in this practice was every time you got a nail in your tire, we took it out and we fixed your tire. The problem isn't that you're getting nails in your tires. The problem is that you have nails in your driveway. And so would you want me to just keep fixing your tires every time you come in, or would you like me to help you figure out how many nails you have in your driveway and get rid of the nails?
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, I mean, and that's as simple as it gets. And the bacteria, you get rid of those bad bacteria, you stop having cavities.
You mean you could have told us that first 20 minutes that shortly?
What's that?
You could have told us that first 20 minutes with all those big words.
I could have wrapped up that first 20 minutes in that.
Okay, so I think this is really a neat thing, and this is one of the things that attracted me to this topic for us tonight was to include this, and I think this caries risk assessment, as it becomes and probably is already the standard of care, is something all of you need to be incorporating into your practice. Let's talk a bit more about these high-risk patients.
Well, I think, Bill, the high-risk patients are typically the ones in the greatest need for restorative care,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, they have the most cavities, and they continue their chronic cavity patients. And, I mean, we all have patients in our practice that you can't fill their teeth literally fast enough.
Yeah.
They come in every 6 months, and they've got more decay. And at some point in time, they get tired of spending money on big fillings, crowns, and root canals, and, we move them toward implants and dentures because we couldn't control the disease. And it's frustrating for them, and they see it as a bad investment. At some point in time, they typically give up hope and throw in the towel and say, I'm not spending any more money here.
I'm wondering, how could you market this to non-patients and reach some of those exact patients you just described? I don't know if you've thought about this, but how could we market this?
I haven't thought about it a lot, Bill. But I mean, my thought would run toward, reaching out to people. Do you have, do you chronically get cavities? Are you tired of that? Would you like to stop having cavities
mm-hmm.
for life? Because that's what we're talking about here, and that's the power of this. And the patients, Bill, that I've treated successfully, and I mean, that's almost everybody, when you treat the patient like this, and they've been a chronic cavity patient, they've had it their entire life, and they're like one, two. I've got patients now that are 4.5 going years decay-free for the first time in their lives, and they got mouths full of crowns. They know who, you know, they talk about these things. Patients, you know, they know exactly who else has the same kind of dental experience as they have at in their school, at church, in their circle of friends. And guess who they send those people to? I mean, this is a life-changing experience for these people. It's not like, oh, that was really nice, you did a pretty job on my veneers. This is life a life-changing experience for these people.
And you know, I saw a lady like this actually sat next to Carolyn at the football game on Saturday. That, first off, she was way overweight, didn't look like she was in very good health, and her teeth were an absolute mess. And you looked at her, and at first I thought maybe she was a meth patient or something.
Right.
But assuming she wasn't a meth patient, I can tell you this is a lady that had extremely high caries risk, had decay all over her mouth. And she's probably one of those people that has given up on this. We didn't talk about that with her, but it was unbelievable. You know, she had the money to pay for those football tickets.
Yeah.
And so was, and her husband looked, he was normal. He wasn't overweight. He was looked very healthy, but she just looked terrible. And part of it was she had missing teeth. She had decayed teeth in the front. You know, I'm thinking of an opportunity here for all my clients. You know, we're all trying to market, and we're all trying to market the same thing. And when I say we all, I'm talking about all dentists in every community are all trying to market cosmetic dentistry. And you all heard me say that. I think that's way over-marketed at this point. We've pretty much, sure, there's still people out there who could use veneers, but what makes your ad stand out from somebody else's ad? If you could, I think we ought to explore the possibility of coming up with an ad. It could be a direct mail. It could be a newspaper ad. It could be a radio ad. It could be anything with the right language about curing decay for the rest of your life before you do any more restorative dentistry.
Yeah, and I tell you what, Bill, the that is more powerful than anything that I've ever had in my practice. You know, whether it's, you know, and I've got the lasers and CEREC and digital x-rays, and you go down the list, and those all have a great impact, and they're all powerful, but this is like truly a life-changing experience for these patients. I mean, it's just...
Kim has so much high-tech in his office that he has grounding plates that you have to touch before you walk in the front door because the static electricity will shut the office down.
We do have a lot of electrical fields in this place.
So
it's a simple thing to get down to really helping a patient. And so I take these high-risk patients, and we don't do any fine restorative dentistry until we do have the biofilm under control, because if anything else is just a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had those failures in those cases. And I'm not doing that. You know, it's always, you know, it's the patient's crown when they walk out the door, and when they come back a year later with recurrent decay around the margin, it's your crown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we as dentists in great faith try and help our patients, and we redo a lot of work for free and what have you. And it's like that costs us so much money. And when I start with these patients, I get them, we start to work on their biofilm with these products. I plug all the holes in their teeth with glass ionomer to start with. And once I know that the biofilm is correct and they're healthy, now and I can go back and whatever money, and I can assure them whatever money you spend on restorative care now is not going to be wasted. And at that point in time, things change pretty dramatically for them. I mean, their checkbooks open up and they get a lot more interested in having more ideal dentistry. The percentage of large cases that I do now has gone up significantly in my practice. It's a win-win-win. I mean, the patients are getting better care. You're getting them healthy maybe for the first time in their life, and you know, they're getting better dentistry as a result of that.
Yeah, before we go on, I've got a couple more slides I want to show, but I'd like to open this up to some questions for Dr. Cooch. Anybody who has a question, just speak up. We've got a small group tonight, maybe, 17 of you, so you can speak up.
Chris Clever here.
Go ahead, Chris.
Question, you know, you always hear about people brushing with baking soda. I mean, that's basic enough. Was this on the right track and it never went farther than that? Or,
you know, I tell you, baking soda is a sodium bicarbonate is a reasonable alkaline agent. It's pretty abrasive. Our products don't have any abrasivity in them at all, and so our gels are not considered dentifrice because the abrasive that's in toothpaste doesn't remove plaque. It's actually the toothbrush bristle that does.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you look at some of the scientific research. But yeah, there was actually, but it's not a really good alkalizing agent. And you can't really put people on a lot of sodium. I mean, most of my patients that are have a dry mouth or xerostomia have sodium restricted diets in the first place.
Right.
So it has some issues. But yeah, elevating the pH is on the right track. There was actually a patent written by a dentist in about 1981 who believed he could cure dental caries if patients would carry around a bottle with filled with baking soda, you know, sodium bicarbonate, and they would rinse with it every 15 minutes.
Hmm.
Well, that probably would work. But
and what about, how does the ozone treatment that's in, been in New Zealand and
Europe.
Great Britain fit in all this?
I know those guys really well. Ozone is a strong oxidizer, and it's really that's really more directed at treating a cavity or a lesion, not
right.
treating the biofilm disease.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, but it, you know, it certainly has a role. It certainly disinfects that area. I think you should still eliminate the defect. I mean, clean out the decayed sterile tissue and put in a resin or a glass ionomer resin of some sort. So you don't continue to have that defect, because it's those fissures and those defects are about the only place on the teeth when we do DNA studies that harbor mutant streptococci. They really pretty much only live in those crevices.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Chris. Great question, by the way.
So the old baking salt and baking soda that the old timers promoted wasn't so bad. It's just they didn't
probably
think about
better.
The rest.
It's probably body. Better than it'd be better than a lot of stuff that's on the market today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
what about
I'd be with
you
there.
Like a baking soda rinse. I mean,
yeah.
Bill, Jim Tannehill.
Jim, go ahead.
I just was exposed to the Featherstone work about 3 weeks ago at a meeting, and they use a culture and an oven and an auger plate to culture bacteria.
Yeah.
Can I assume that this is all of water over the dam, that you don't do any of this?
Yeah, I don't do any of that. I did. I actually manufactured a, developed, and it's you can actually buy it from us, a very accurate mutant streptococci culture. But the problem is you've got to have an oven. You know, it's going to take 2 days to culture it. Then you have to get the patient back in. I mean, that's problematic. And the problem with most of those cultures is they're not that sensitive or specific. And so when you look at them as a whole, it was our best screening tool that we had 4 years ago. But at this point in time, the CariScreen swab and meter system that measures ATP, we have much higher validation on it than we do at with any kind of culture. In fact, John Featherstone now has two of those meters and swabs at UCSF. As of August, he looked at all my scientific research and he said, it's good enough. So I got that.
Yeah, what's funny is about 35 years ago, I stayed with Bob Barclay. Some of you may remember Bob Barclay, and I had an incubator built, and it was labeled Dr. B's Black Bank, and we used to take swabs of people's mouths. Kim, actually, when you came into my office, Kim and a partner were building an office in Corvallis about 35 years ago. Their office wasn't quite complete on time, and so we let them work in our office on our days off or something. I can't remember how we did it, but we did. But about that time, I was growing plaque and phase microscope trying to identify these things. I wasn't doing it very scientifically. But it's interesting you've come so far with the science of it. Okay, other questions from some of you? I have some more questions.
I still have a lot of questions.
Yeah, Kim, this is Phil Gaduco. My question is, you started to talk about the caries risk assessment.
Yep.
What are the assessments that you do?
Basically,
is there a checklist that you go through?
It's basically a checklist, and I could actually send a copy of that to you, Phil, but primarily we're looking at, we've identified different risk factors, and then actually some of those risk factors got elevated to, like, disease indicators. Like, there's such a strong odds ratio that you have the disease or high risk for the disease. So if they have any one of the four disease indicators or they have any of the risk factors, you're at risk for the disease. And so let's, like, a couple of the disease indicators are, if you have interproximal radiographic lesions that extend to the dentin, which, you know, we see that quite frequently, particularly on adolescents as well, because they have posterior teeth that haven't been restored yet, maybe. If you have a visible cavity, like if you sit in the chair and I look at your mouth, I take one look in there and I see a visible cavity, I know that you have the disease. It's not a matter of, that's not a risk factor anymore. We know that actually establishes you've got the disease. If you have heavy visible plaque on your anterior teeth, or if you've had a cavity in the last 3 years, those are four, you check one of those and this patient's at risk for the disease. The risk factors include, not having adequate saliva, snacking more than three times between meals, not adequate fluoride, they feel like they have a dry mouth, some of those types of issues. So we just go down that checklist, and literally your hygienist or your assistant can do that. It shouldn't take them more than a minute to do that.
Okay. And do you measure the pH as well? Do you have a litmus paper that you...
Oh, the pH actually, yeah, I've done that. The problem is the pH is transient in the mouth. I mean, it's really affected by what you just ate, how long ago you ate, what your buffering capacity is. So there's some issues with pH. In fact, there was just a new test developed in Europe where they're looking at lactic acid produced based on the surface of the tongue from the bacteria there. And it's a quick, simple test, so the problem is it doesn't correlate well at all to the patient's caries risk. So pH is problematic in trying to determine as a diagnostic instrument. So we don't really measure pH. Rather, we're looking at ATP levels on the teeth. Like I'll take a swab of the teeth, and those ATP levels are indicative they have a high correlation to total bacterial load, mutant streptococci load, because cariogenic or let's say acid uric bacteria are able to pump the hydrogen ions out of their cell continuously. That's how they survive in that acidic environment. And that requires up to 100 times as much ATP as a normal resting cell would require in a neutral biofilm. So ATP is a pretty solid, it's the best that we've got at the moment based on our correlation studies. And we did three different studies at OHSU on that.
And how do you measure that?
How do you measure it?
Mm-hmm.
ATP, you just swab the teeth. We have a real protocol for that. It's easy to do. Again, a hygienist or assistant can do that. You take the swab the teeth, stick it in a meter. It's a light-sensitive meter. It actually uses bioluminescence technology, and it's been around for a long time. And we just figured out how to use it, to make this diagnosis in dentistry. And in 15 seconds, you get a reading of relative light units. And what we've established in our research is that if the patient has 1,500 relative light units or less on your test, they're low risk for decay. And if they're above 1,500, they're at risk or they have the disease.
Mm-hmm.
And we have correlations on that going from 0.69 up to about 0.895. Those would be the Pearson correlation values. The correlation values in comparison for four of the different cultures that are on the market run from about 0.22 to 0.41. So, anyway, that's just the scientific research. But so I feel pretty confident in that test. It's a 15-second real-time chairside test. So I've got a biometric that I can treat to. When the patient comes in 6 months from now, a year from now, I can test them again. I had a little kid just in this afternoon. He had six cavities. He's 4 years old. He had six cavities. My associate sent him to a pedodontist. He came back. He's sitting in my chair. The six cavities are now filled. And he had a carry screen score of 8,700. Well, now we've got work to do. And I explained that to Dad. It's like, if we don't do anything about this, he's going to have six more cavities probably next year. In fact, he's got two radiographic lesions right at the moment that are about halfway through the enamel on I&J, which are the only two that didn't get filled yet. So I'm thinking, we need to raise the pH. I explained that to Dad, and they went home with the products. I'm expecting to see the kid in a month to check his ATP again, and we're going to get him healthy and have him maybe decay-free for the rest of his life.
So let's talk about what you have for products. Well, first off, any other questions about the process, the idea, the whole concept? I want to talk about the products. I want to talk how to introduce it into practice. I want to talk about profit potential.
Okay.
Before we end this.
Okay. So products, Bill, we've got a whole set of products for adults, and we have the first ever entire system to treat children with as well in terms of products. On the carry-free side, which is for adults, we have a treatment rinse. And the treatment rinse is really a short-term therapeutic antimicrobial rinse. The standard of care up to this point of time has been chlorhexidine. and povidone iodine. Povidone iodine doesn't work well on adults. You can only use it one time a month. It tastes like crap. Chlorhexidine doesn't have any effect on on lactobacillus. It's effective on mutant streptococci, but I have to tell you, they are a puny bug. Anything kills mutant streptococci. But lactobacillus, which play a larger role, we believe, in the decay process itself, they're not affected by chlorhexidine. So I then went to look for the best antimicrobial agent that we could use to get rid of these bacteria, all bacteria in the mouth, take the numbers way down. And turns out sodium hypochlorite is the safest, has the least adverse effects. And so it's already been grandfathered by the FDA, although nobody had ever used it because it, quite frankly, doesn't taste that great either. But interestingly enough, it also has a pH of about 10.5. So you put a patient on that product, if they're high risk, we put them on that product for 30 days, have them use it twice a day for half a minute to a minute, swishing with it. We've had very good compliance with that, and we've got a number of studies going right at the moment on that particular product. Then once they get through that regimen, we put them on a gel to brush with to replace toothpaste, basically, which has a pH of 9.0. It's got xylitol and fluoride in it. And at the same point in time, the oral neutralizing gel. Then we put them on a maintenance rinse, which is a 0.05% fluoride and xylitol rinse, and has a pH of 8.0. We also have a spray for zero stomach. Primarily, I recommend it for zero stomach patients. They use it twice during the morning and twice in the afternoon, just to buffer, keep the pH in their mouth up. A lot of my patients that are on either sleep apnea appliance or CPAP appliances, or if they're mouth breathers and they have xerostomia, I have them use it at bedtime or keep it on their nightstand, and it works. It's very effective for that as well. We also have the only xylitol gum on the planet that also has a neutralizing agent in it, so it raises your pH too. That pretty much sums up the adult products. I'm just calling this off the top of my head from memory here. On the children's side, that product line is Xylitots. We have a 0.05% fluoride rinse with xylitol, same stuff, pH of 8.0. Comes in grape and watermelon flavor. We have an oral neutralizing gel for a version for children. It doesn't have any foaming agents, doesn't have any sodium lauryl sulfate in it, and it doesn't have any fluoride in it, so it's literally safe for them to eat. And so like a one-year-old might eat it and swallow it, but you can brush their teeth with it safely. We also have a boost spray for children. It's grape flavored. Then we have, for infants, it's like a handy wipe, but it's an oral wipe, disposable wipe that has xylitol and a pH elevating agent as well. So, we used to think that you didn't get these bacteria until your first teeth erupted, and we now know that we can culture them in the mouth within 2 weeks of birth. And the worst infection the mother has, the sooner and the worse the infection will occur in the child, and that's the greatest risk indicator for their actually childhood development of caries. So we want to start treating infants, keeping their mouth healthy as well, even before the teeth erupt. We also have a lollipop that has a licorice root extract, which is a natural occurring antimicrobial agent for mutant streptococci. So we've got a good product base for children to use as well.
So a good product for pregnant women.
Good product for pregnant mom.
The caries problem before they give birth.
Absolutely. If you could treat mom before she gives birth, that's the best thing you could do for the child. And the scientific studies on that are really clear. So that kind of sums up the product.
Sorry, good.
We also have built a carry screen meter and swab setup.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that that works very, very well.
Kim, I don't know if you've explored this. We're always looking. A number of our clients on this call are working with a Center for Dental Medicine, working on this in the treating perio disease in the correlation with systemic health and working with cardiologists, et cetera. I see as a real networking with obstetricians, gynecologists on pregnant women. As a test for them, if you could get this test in the hands of a nurse in a gynecologist or an obstetrics office, and do a caries risk assessment test, anybody at high risk, obviously the children are going to come out with the same problem.
Yep,
it could be a real marketing thing. Kim, to put this in place in someone's office, what are the steps they would do?
Well, we actually have free training, and we do kind of a same kind of thing, a WebEx training seminar. You know, we do in office for the staff. But the first place to start is with the risk assessment. I encourage people to start with the ATP screening test as well, and then you can either order products and start dispensing them to your patients, or you can actually send the patient to the website and they can buy them direct and have them shipped to them. But it's a matter of just implementing a caries risk assessment form. So you really have to have a team meeting, agree on this is something we want to do, and identify who's going to do what part of it, what fee codes you want to use. There's a lot of different fee codes that we already have coverage for a number of these procedures. For example, the caries susceptibility test, the caries screen falls under that fee code, and that's a D0425. And I have pretty good coverage for most of my patients here in Albany, Oregon. I already have coverage for that fee code. Nobody's ever used it before. So there's a lot of different fee codes, so you have to establish what are your fees going to be. And we have recommendations, and we do that in the training as well. But it's just a matter of implementing the risk assessment form and then being able to get the patients into some products that are going to raise their pH. And like I say, you can either do that direct, or you're going to make at least a 40 margin based on our recommended retail pricing. And we go through, I was just asking Jenny, I've got Jenny from Carefree here with me tonight. In my office, we probably buy several thousand dollars a month worth of product. I mean, I have most of my entire practice on these products. I use them twice a day. And so that results in a couple thousand dollars a month of net income for us just having the patients use these products. And then
I think bigger than the profit is the service. And I think the service and the marketing angle, it makes you distinctly different from another dental office in the area.
I would say, Bill, the thing that's happened in my practice is the request for large elective restorative treatment that, I mean, once patients stop getting cavities, now they want to start buying dentistry. And, I mean, they want to start buying implants and bridges and veneers, and that's been amazing to me.
Well, this is everybody talks about the fact that the patients don't do large cases because of money, and I have said for a long time that it's not because of money. I've used fear as a major factor, but when I started talking to Kim a few months ago about this, I think this makes a lot of sense. So, a lot of people don't do this, don't do large treatment plans, especially the ones that suffer the damage because of decay.
Right.
Don't do it because they've spent money in the past and they still keep having problems. And I think if we can solve the problem and then present the dentistry, show them that we really have solved the problem that they've had in the past, you know, we've stopped decay in their mouth, but then I think the acceptance, and Kim proved this, pointed this out, is going to go up dramatically. That's where I see the biggest profit potential.
And also, if you think about it, from a risk standpoint, my greatest risk of anything that I do in dentistry as a practitioner is those expensive restorative cases on patients who are high risk for caries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my greatest risk for failure and having issues is that's where my risk is at. And so I reduce my own risk, restorative risk as well. But that's where the greatest income potential comes out of this. And those are the cases that we all want to do.
Everybody wants to do them. We're all looking for an angle. We're all looking for some hook that will get people involved in these large restorative cases. And, you know, we used cosmetics as that hook, and I think it's now overused.
Yeah.
I think this is another one. Okay, we have some time for some questions. I do want to thank Kim for his time tonight. And please, if you have questions about this and how you can put it in place in your practice, one thing Kim did not do, they do have a website.
Oh, sorry.
And what is that web address, Kim?
It's carefree.com. And it's
carefree.com.
CARIFREE.com.
And their phone number is 800-503-0625. And I know that because it's on my anti-cavity daily caries reduction maintenance rinse, which I use every day.
So it's a simple, I would tell you that I started 7 years ago doing this in my practice, and it was a very complex process. And we have simplified this down to, we have probably close to 1,000 dentists in the U.S. doing this now, and we know how to help people get jump start into this and make it a painless process to get started.
Okay, questions for Kim.
Hi, Kim. Mark Amadei. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good.
Great, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. You know, I was in and out on some of the conversation, and I heard, you know, Carrie's free for life. And when you get a patient to ask you, well, doc, how are you going to do that? Now, you went over a lot of different things. If I understood that once you've changed the pH, the maintenance that you have to do, that is a xylitol product, and pretty much they have to continue with that. What is the time frame where that will reverse if they stop?
We don't know, Mark.
Okay.
Nobody's done this. I mean, we're scrambling to do the science to catch up with where we're at in terms of treatment. In terms of adverse treatment outcomes, it'll probably be 10 years before we have that kind of data. Five to 10 years anyway in terms of scientific research. Okay. But the reality is I can get you healthy. I can raise the pH in your mouth, and I can get a healthy biofilm growing. And I know based on my clinical experience with a lot of patients that as long as we continue to keep you in a treatment or a maintenance regimen, you'll continue to stay healthy. Now, the thing about risk factors is they change during your life as well. You naturally have a decreased flow of saliva as you age as part of the process.
I wish we could limit it to that as we age.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that be nice? You're probably going to see more recession and more root surface exposure, which increases your caries risk. You may start taking a diuretic for antihypertensives, which we know create xerostomia. There's 900 drugs now that have been documented that one of the main side effects is xerostomia. So, I mean, you guys all see this in your adult, or I hate to say seniors anymore because now I think of myself and them as adults. In your older adult patients, you see a lot of people with xerostomia, and so maybe they were decay-free their entire life. In fact, you see these patients. They've been decay-free. You restored them 20 years ago. They've been decay-free for 20 years. Now they're 80 years old, and they come in, they have 6 cavities out of nowhere.
Right.
Right?
So
they started taking a different medication. They changed their diet. So you have those issues to deal with. So when I talk about decay-free for life, yeah, but I'm going to need to be able to monitor that and work with you on that to make sure that we can accomplish
that. Okay, well, then that's good to know. I mean, because you have to have an answer for people when they ask you, you know, the question.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing is, what happens to the patient that, I can call in my mind 4 or 5 different people that I've been working with for 15, 20 years.
Yep.
And, you know, you work on their hygiene. You try to get them to take the plaque off. A lot of times they just don't get it. And no matter how many times I might sit down and demonstrate it to them or have the hygienist, they come back in. A month and a half later, they're full of plaque again. Now, if they're using this product and they're still not quite getting the dexterity that's required to remove the plaque, will it still transform the microfilm or the biofilm so that the plaque that's sitting there is not destructive?
Yep. Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay, so they're going to still accumulate the plaque. They'll still not remove it. So if they're like terrible hygienic patients.
Yep. But it's really, if you think about it, if they have healthy bacteria there that are not sacrolytic and are not contributing to creating a low pH on the tooth in that particular site, you're not going to get demineralization or, you know, a net mineral loss there at the enamel interface. So,
gotcha. So the key is above 5.2 on the pH.
Yeah, it's really 5.5. It's really not how much plaque you have; it's which bacteria are in the plaque.
Gotcha.
And that's how we have to start looking at this disease differently. I mean, you can't brush and floss it away.
This is the thing that I think where we failed miserably is, your Carrie Katie asked me where I got my information, but this was a factoid on USA Today one time that said the consumption of floss in the United States is 18 inches of floss for every adult in the country. That's annual consumption. So we have not reached the public with this idea of flossing.
No.
And I think that any product that can take the place of flossing, I mean, all of you floss, but, you know, how many of your patients really floss? Well, the answer is they floss for about 3 days just after their hygiene visit. They don't floss again until about 3 days before their next hygiene visit.
If that.
Yeah,
right.
If that.
Yeah.
And this is so much easier for them to use.
Yeah. So my last question is approximately what is the cost to the patient per month, per week, per year?
The cost of the carry-free products, if they're on maintenance, and we were just trying to figure this out, it was like 50 cents a day, somewhere in that neighborhood.
So 50 cents, so about $15 a month.
Let's say 20.
Okay, let's say 20.
Okay.
So, which is not even, you know, a set of X-rays and a cleaning.
No, I mean, you know, if you know, so here's the, it's less than they spend on their hair or nails.
Oh,
it's
sure
less than they spend at Starbucks.
I mean, it's less than they spend at Starbucks in a week.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
When you look at that, think of it in this terms, one crown is $3 a day for a year.
Exactly.
Right? So it's like you look at this and it's like, well, would you rather spend $240 and not have a cavity next year? What's my cheapest filling fee? $200?
Yep.
I mean, it's like, you know, where do you want to spend your money?
Right.
You know, we have a client. Is Robert Tanner on the call tonight? Kim, he's the one I want you to get in touch with. For those of you who don't know Robert, Robert is in the Seattle area, a small town, Issaquah, just outside of Seattle.
Right.
And he has, he and his wife have five children, and they have a lot of friends with a lot of children. And he has a large pedo component to his practice, and he has this caries-free program, not related to this caries-free product, but he brings these kids in, it's either three or four times a year, and they pay $250 a visit, and he basically tells them, and he is one of your, I believe he's now using your product, Kim, that if I can keep your child caries-free until they're an adult, they really won't have any dentistry as adults. And his analogy is, and all the dentistry we do for you, speaking of mom and dad, is really repair of old dentistry. And he charges $250 for this service. Now, the reason I want to emphasize this is he has about 1,000 kids on this program. Well, there's $250,000 a year that his hygiene department generates just on seeing these kids. And you all know, and he's, you know, Seattle is Delta Dental country. You've got Boeing aircraft on Delta's economy plan. They only pay for two profies a year, and they don't pay $250, believe me. And yet he's got 1,000 kids coming in on an annual basis paying him $250 a visit. I said $250.
Yeah.
It's more than that. It's $100,000 a year that he's taking in on this program. It's, if they come in four times, it's $1,000 to come in three times, $750. And I couldn't...
Right.
What I'm pointing out, it's a lot of revenue, and it's not covered by insurance, and parents are eager to pay it.
Right. I mean,
if you could add something like this, combine those two programs in a practice, I mean, it's a tremendous service, and it is a big revenue stream of patients that you don't see, and it really goes against a little bit what I've taught, that most practices are over-hygiened, and that's because the hygienist is offering the same service every time. Clean your teeth twice a year and give you a fluoride treatment. And you know, that's really great, but that's all they're offering for the most part. If you had some other things to offer, this is one of them.
Yep.
Any other questions for Kim? Got a few of you muted, so if you're muted, it takes a second to get on the phone.
Kim, what happens if you just stick a pH strip in their mouth? Is that any indicator?
The problem with that is, you can do that. The problem is, if you guys go back to dental school and remember the Stefan curve?
No, tell us. None of us remember that.
Okay, all right. Well, the classic Stefan curve is your pH is pretty close to somewhere in the mid-6 to 7 in the resting saliva in your mouth. And as soon as you eat, it drops to, like, below 4 because of our enzymes and the bacterial activity that's going on as we're starting to digest the food as we're chewing it. And then 30 minutes in a healthy mouth, 30 minutes to an hour after that, the pH, there's actually healthy bacteria in our plaque that help raise the pH for us along with the buffering agents in the saliva, but our pH comes back up to its resting close to neutral, and then every time you eat it drops back again. So it's like, depending upon where you're at on that curve during the day when you test the pH, you could be below 4 or you could be at 7. And so you really don't have a diagnostic indicator of, well, you know, you're just taking one picture of a moment in time on a scale that's changing continuously throughout the day.
It's a still photo of a race car. How fast is it moving?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult thing to try and draw a conclusion from.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're asking great questions. I mean, and trust me, we looked at that. If this is a pH issue, is there a way to diagnose from the pH? And the problem is the pH changes so much throughout the mouth during the entire day that we really can't measure that.
Stick a pH meter in there, just kind of like the diabetic pumps that gives you a continual readout.
Yeah.
Constant readout, constant injection of
wireless.
Yeah.
That would be cool. Back to, yeah. But anyway, that's but so that's the problem with pH.
Thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to, one more thing I'd like to mention. We have a meeting next month, this Blatch 40 group, that is going to be about laser perio. We're going to have some links to Eukna and Raymond's study from that. We're going to have several doctors on there talking about this as a treatment modality. I know some of you on this call are already doing it, but a lot of people in our program are not. Kim, you have any comments on this? You've done a lot of work with lasers over the years.
Guys, I'll tell you what, attend that seminar. I know Ray personally. It's very good science. I've been doing laser perio therapy for almost 20 years now. It works, and now they have the good tissue block section study to prove it. So it's I wouldn't imagine doing perio without it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to thank Kim. I want to thank you for being on this program, but more than that, I think thank you for all the research you've done your whole life on this subject. And because I really think there's a huge difference, and dentists have been known as molar mechanics for a long time. And, of course, all the doctors on this call, Kim, are always looking for the next answer out there and are always searching. They're definitely not molar mechanics. But, you know, truly dentistry has been in the repair business for years, and we've done very little in the area of prevention. We've given lip service and, you know, just various things. A lot of these doctors are following them. Chris Kammer's program of Zero Tolerance for Bleeding, recognizing that bleeding is not just a normal amount, that bleeding is a sign of disease.
Right.
And I think the same thing with decay, but I don't think decay has really been addressed other than our hygienists lecturing them one more time on how to floss their teeth correctly. So.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the opportunity. I tell you, this is I really think this is the next thing for the professional to look at. And, guys, any way I can be a resource to anybody or help you with this, just let me know.
And we have recorded this call as well. We're going to send it out to all of our clients. So I want to thank all of you being on the call tonight. And if I don't talk to you again, have a great holidays. And I'll see you after the first of the year.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good night. Thank you.